We'll
start broadcast that as us on air now. I was... Yeah. Anyway, futzing. Here we go.
We want fun!
Good spell. We John and Mary on a good spell. It's off and on and it's everything you wanted to know. Tune into the DS106 radio show. Intellectual conversation, the leaders of the game. They are bright, they are sweet, so go on, give them a tweet. The DS106 Good Spell Show.
Ah, certainly. Do give us a tweet, folks, if you're out there, and say hello. This is John Johnson, and this is the DS106 Good Spell, fatsing splendidly since 2013 on the DS106 Radio for Life. This is one of 106 bullets from blog post number 106, published by the DS106 Shrink at 106 AM on Tumblr at the end of the headless run of DS106. Our hashtag is #106spell. This is gospel radio for the DS106 generation. Mantras and cones, if you like, that explore the open online course, Digital Storytelling 106. We'll be meditating and rambling about education, openness, open education, art, fun and learning. As I said, I'm John Johnson, and with me as usual is Mariana Funes. Good evening, Mariana.
Good evening, John. How are you this evening?
Well, now I've got all the pipes and tubes connected in the right order, and as far as I can tell, we are live on the internet.
We're live with a new mic that's making you sound awesome.
Yeah, let's hope so. hope we are live and we're on the internet. And
yes. As
if somebody would tell us that before we get handy at some point. I've forgotten my phone and other thing. But this is episode 4 of the final season of the 106 Spell. Because this is October the 2nd. And the title, because we're talking titles now, of this episode is The Island of Lost Tools. And it comes from bullet number 7. So we're not doing... Oh, is that this set? That's
this will be this will be 99, won't it? From last, if we're following from the thing, I think.
And the bullet point was, don't learn a tool. You learn how to use tools over and over and over and don't get attached to them. So, we talk quite a lot about attachment here, Mariana, which I guess maybe is your Buddhist leanings.
I was going to say it's probably my bias, that one.
But we don't want to get attached to tools. Why not?
I do remember why I wrote, you know, when I wrote this, because... I think in the time that we did the Headless 13 run, you know, we had a number of things, that I was just learning how to use, and I'm going, oh, this would be useful, or that would be useful. And then they go away. And it is an interesting dynamic, I think, in all of this, which is there is a kind of meta level, which I feel, you know, the S106 has helped me learn, which is really about you learn how to learn to use tools, any number of tools, for maybe for the same purpose, but different ones. And I do think that there are people who never learn that. And then, you know, the one thing that they use somehow goes away, goes to the island of lost tools. And then they don't know how to learn something else that will be similar, that might do the same thing. So that's really what this is, that, you know, if you become too attached to them, the net result is you get grumpy. You, like we do sometimes with, you know, Twitter, when it changes the star for the heart, you know, you get grumpy, you get annoyed, you moan, but, you know, you have no say. They have a right to do whatever they want with their stuff. And in a sense, that's kind of the psychological contract we have, which is none.
Even if you've got a contract, they'll change something. And I'm thinking, as a sort of school teacher, I meet other teachers and talking about how to teach children to use software. And in the past, very much, I think people were actually teaching children to use things that they didn't use that often themselves in the way they were teaching, and they followed some sort of sheet. Do this, then you do that. You know, select this text, say way how to do it. Instead of teaching them exactly what you say, learn to use tools. And it's what you need to be able to do, I think, is the thing you should, is there should be a target. You know, I want to have X, Y, or Z. I want to tell this story. I want to, you know, make this image look like this. But the how-to should be, how do I find out how to do that? How do I choose a tool that will do that? And if I've got a tool...
Yes, that's really interesting because I kept thinking, what was it specifically that we did in DS106 that taught, you know, teaches us that? And of course, it's just that, isn't it? Because it's not tool dependent. It is often just what you've described, you know, make a poster, do a thing, do a video, and then the how, you know, what we learn is we use Google to find out how.
You know, people do how-tos for different tools, but there's a whole choice of them, and I think you get used to them being outdated and switching away and all the rest of it, but it's the emphasis is not on the tool. The emphasis is on the story or the thing you're trying to produce, I think, or it should be, and I think this is one thing that DS106 does very well compared to formal education. And Jap's telling me I'm too quiet. I think this is his new mic, unfortunately. It's a very quiet one. I'm looking at the wee differs around the side, so you might not hear me for a minute.
Okay.
I think it's... Oh, wait. I wonder, is that any louder?
Not for me, but it might be louder for our listeners. Jap will tell us in a minute if it's better.
It's coming straight for Skype. The other way I could do it is talk louder. Which might work. That's the old-fashioned way.
A low-tech way.
Yeah. And I always love that idea of, you know, what's the best zoom you've got in your camera? Take a step closer, you know, which is great, except for cliff situations, I think. What we'll do here...
That's a bit better.
I'm going to see if I can just do a...
It's better.
Oh, is it better now? Yeah, it's basically because I've jumped near the microphone. But what I'm going to hopefully do is just turn up the gain there. I don't know if that's any better. And I'll whack that up there. And what do I do that way? Is that any good? Or is that better? Don't know.
Well, leave it for a bit, and then he'll tell us. I don't notice any difference listening to you.
This is exactly what we're talking about here. I think is we're on live, something we've done many times, and I'm hopelessly failing to do it. I'm going to take automatically adjust my microphone settings out of Skype. Is that any difference?
That sounds good. Yeah. Not to me.
Not to you. Oh well.
you sound equally marvellous to me.
Because the tubes we're using at the moment is that I'm using a new application called Loopback, and it's taking in iTunes and my microphone and spitting them out as a audio device, a sort of fake audio device, and that is been pulled into Skype, and Skype is then being pushed towards Nicecast, and Nicecast takes Skype in. But I'm seeing my levels are popping now right up to the top, so I'm hoping that's good. Well, give us another tweet if it sounds terrible at any point. let's see.
But it is precisely this idea, isn't it? It's the fat sink thing. It's the kind of being comfortable with, let's just work it out together. And not feeling like, you know, you have to have the perfect list of steps to follow, because if the thing that you're dependent on ends up in the island of lost tools, and you only have one little list, then you just don't have a way out to find out the you know, to learn other things. And often, particularly, I would say, less so with us, and more so with the people who are less technically able, they often learn in the kind of way that you were describing. They tend to, you know, give me the little list so that I know exactly what I need to click.
Yeah, and that's just, I mean, every time that's going to be wrong. It's not working for us. You see that as soon as people are put in a situation where something's different, that it falls down. So definitely we need to learn to learn how to use software, learn to figure out a new piece of software. And partially it's been helped by software getting better at that, I think. But we still need to sort of engender that attitude. It's the same sort of attitude, I guess, that we want to engender in children, certainly, as an approach to their learning, is that they, you know, have a go, try things out, have a playful attitude. And maybe it comes back to that, is what we want to do, is have a playful attitude. And in the show notes, you've got one of the things is Google Hangouts. You said Perna Beta, I no longer try to learn unless I'm using it.
And I was reading, in fact, so it has two elements to that. The fact that, you know, it's always changing. And so at any one time, if you've learned how to and you go back, it just confuses things rather than dealing with what you've got in front of you. But the other element is that this thing of, you know, something constantly changing because it's new technology, because of whatever reason, and a flip side of it is there is a kind of learning fatigue that happens. Mm. You know, I don't know about you, but when I think about Google Hangouts, you know, I have a big sigh and I go, oh, here we go. I have to learn how to use the bloody thing again. And there is, you know, I think that there is something about how we do the design, how often we change things, for what purpose, all of that. Google, I think, is particularly bad with that because, you know, it basically uses its users for its research and its fixings, doesn't it? But it's, you know, I was just reading, in fact, because Google Hangouts on Air are disappearing.
Yeah.
And now we've got, so I was just going into the creator's studio. Have you been to the creator's studio?
Well, yeah, because yesterday I was along at a conference in Glasgow here for teachers called Pedigoo. This one was called Pedigoo Muckle, Muckle being a Scottish word for big. And Pedigoo obviously comes from pedagogy. And the idea is I was trying to explain to people how to broadcast from conferences and unconferences. And I've done a fair bit of that, but usually audio. And so I had to dig in a wee bit to figure out the YouTube thing. And luckily, Alan Cogdog has just posted a nice blog post about that, which I scavenged through. And basically, yeah, that creator studio, you can do that, but you basically avoid doing anything complicated because you will get lost in a million settings, and all you do is really say, give me an event, new event, start it now, bang, and that's you broadcasting.
The one thing that I will say that I've found out for, as a practical thing for the people who are using it, is that the question and answer thing is gone, will be gone once. And that was a really useful thing about the Hangouts on Air. But that, I think, has gone. Then there was something that I've never used, something called Showcase and Applause. And I've never used either one of those, but they've gone as well. As once you start to use the creator studio rather than Hangouts on Air.
Yeah.
But it seems like you've got everything, but of course it's a new interface, so you have to effectively start again. It goes back to this thing of, you know, so here we go, we've got live stream. Yes, I recognize that there is an event and I recognize this, but then, you know, you'll have to, except that I'm getting distracted now. We are live on DS106 radio, but it looks like it will give me my own URL so that I can publicly host things.
Yeah.
That was a problem, actually, with the Hangouts on Air, getting the right link to send to people.
Yeah, but the events seem to just have a URL with them, I think, and you can just pop that out. But the other thing that you do is look around for something else, and it used to be Ustream was a place to go for this, and it still seems to be ticking away. And there's the newish tool, which is Periscope.
How have you found that? Because I noticed that you did a few tests over during the week.
Yeah, it pops it out automatically because it's linked into your Twitter account. It's, I think, owned by Twitter. The first time, and I've used it a wee while, occasionally on and off, and watched a few things, but I saw Bonnie Stewart from Canada, mm-hmm. I think, yeah, doing a keynote somewhere, maybe about a year ago, and basically she put down her phone, you know, sitting on beside her on the stage, and did her keynote, or a presentation, and it was great. I mean, the video wasn't, you know, startling because the lighting was poor in the room, and you know there was more light on the screen and less light on Bonnie. But the audio was just super, and that was over 3G. I was watching over 3G, and it was really good. So I think they worked very hard to get a good mobile experience on that. And what we're doing now is talking about the tools, of course.
we said we were trying to try to avoid, yeah, didn't we? Because we like to talk about tools.
Yeah, I mean, and it's probably worth coming back to a few specifics, but one thing you say is it's the futzing, and it's the playing around, but by futzing I always think of play, and you say we embed the learning of the tool into the interaction, mm-hmm. and it's, yeah, and again, the rating your work I think is quite a good idea in that point of view. I quite often learned how to do something technical by explaining it to somebody else, I think.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, and you realise when you're trying to write about it or explain it to somebody that, you know, that what you actually know and what you don't know, and, you know, what you find out as you go along. And it's a really good way, I think, of learning, and that is definitely part of the DS106.
Now that I'm kind of, you know, back in companies and, you know, sort of organizational life, I notice the extreme difference in approach, in ethos, as you say, between what we do, say, with tools and technology on DS106 and the expectations in the context of what might be a job.
Mm.
Because there is that sense of the person who is the technical person, they have to know how to use the thing, and they have to tell you the exact steps, and if they don't, then they're incompetent.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is, it's interesting, this whole, you know, this whole idea of playfulness and, you know, futzing and let's just experiment and find out together. Kind of like we do with, you know, you switch a thing and you go, can you hear me better?
Mm-hmm.
There is a way in which I think, in certain contexts, that is just not acceptable if you're going to be considered competent at what you do.
So when you say that it's not acceptable, do you mean that should not be acceptable, or that's the reality of the situation?
I mean, it's the reality.
Yeah.
And so it's all very well for us to say, you know, the best way to learn how to work with this is by engaging in the spirit of experimentation. But then you've got, you know, your boss sitting there, or somebody complains to your boss because actually you didn't know which button to press when you did blah. And mm-hmm. I think that is one of the things that stops people from trying out new technology and new things. I mean, I've had it in the context of as simple as, for people listening, if they haven't used Appear In, it's another kind of, you know, video thing like Skype.
Mm-hmm.
And, but Appear In is the simplest thing to use. You haven't got to download anything. If you've got a computer, all you need is a browser and a link. And the excuses that I have heard from people so that they don't have to push the button oh, I don't think my bandwidth will be good enough. Mm. You stupid. Well, because it's like any excuse not to try the something new because they might look stupid, you see.
Yeah, well, I think that's really important that we have the permission to fail, permission to futz. Mm. And very often in professional situations, you don't. And one of the places that I've noticed that people sort of do is actually software developers. You know, because they will Google things, they will try things out, you know, and they'll use what they know and how to find things out very efficiently. But it doesn't seem to be as shameful not to know something.
Mm.
You know, it's kind of okay to rely on Google or to, you know, check out Stack Overflow or something like that and figure things out to some extent, I think.
If we are talking, if you're saying in the context of, say, developers or so other people who also understand technology, mm-hmm. but I'm not sure that that is so with, you know, people, the people who are non-technical and who just are on the business side of things. I think that often there is the expectation, you know, you just push the button for IT and they fix it. You know, you don't want to know how. And if they don't fix it, then they're crap.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I think that is, you know, something that they are going, you know, it's difficult. It is, it's that thing about, on the one hand, you've got the issue, which is really what we're talking about, that the speed at which, you know, not just things going to the island of lost tools, but also the speed with which things are constantly updated and changed, means that you don't have a, you know, here is the unique set of keys that will work forever. But also you've got, again, going against you when you're talking about being in a job and so on, the assumption that people think you should have that. Which makes it really hard, I think, for people to just say, you know, let's just work it out together.
But we're in an age, I think, that where that's exactly what we need. We need, because things change. I remember reading somewhere, and it may not be true, but it gives you a good idea that, you know, there's a certain number of years after, if you go to university to do electronics, say, a certain number of years after you've graduated, that 50% of the things you learned are now wrong. You know, that it changes, and to work in that field, what you need is not a good memory. You don't need to be able to remember or swallow the handbook. You need to be able to solve problems. And I think certainly to some extent that message has been taken on at my level of education. At least in theory and in patches, you know, the future may have arrived, but it's not evenly distributed. But this idea of teaching and making explicit learning and how we learn, so that hopefully you understand how you learn and then can learn new things, because you're going to have to. I mean, how many new things do you do now that you couldn't have done or didn't exist when, 5 years ago? You know, almost tons of stuff. And if we're talking about digital, which we are, I think, because this is digital storytelling, it's all new, you know. And maybe this, to sort of get back to not being attached to tools, it seems quite surprising that we do get attached to some things that are so new. And I certainly do, you know, my cold dead hand and stuff like that. For fireworks, say, you know.
Oh, you and fireworks! Oh, that's very sad.
It still works, but it, you know, it'll go. And we've talked about Google Reader, which I think is the big one. And maybe it's not, as I was saying earlier before we come on, it's maybe not such a bad thing. That these big tools, if Microsoft Word went away tomorrow, maybe we'd get lots of interesting niche writing tools that people would use. that would suit their purposes, rather than just accepting word as a standard. Maybe not, you know, but I'm thinking just in the last few years when sort of iPads for some people have become useful tools, that the tools, you can get Microsoft Word for the iPad, and it seems a reasonable app, but you can also get a million simpler word processors or text editors that will do one or two things and not do the whole bit, but they're easy to learn, they're easy to pick up, they're easy to throw away when, you know, they stop being made. So that's maybe one. If we don't hang all our hopes on the big fish, might be an idea in tools.
That's interesting, isn't it? Because what you're saying is sometimes if we may be attached to something because we've learned how to use it well, but actually in itself, it may be stifling innovation, because if it disappears, like you were giving the example of the Google Reader, then it can create an opening, I guess, for all sorts of other things that may work better and have more features than the one thing that you got attached to. So I guess there is, you know, there is that as a thing. The issue really is that, you know, it's like once you start to teach about all of this in this way, which is, you know, there isn't an end point. You are constantly doing the, we just learn another one. It can allow you then to also talk about the stuff that actually does happen, which is that, you know, we do get tired of it. There is a kind of learning fatigue that happens, and there is something about good software design versus bad software design. There is also the, you know, what happens. So as things go away, that can be handled really well, or it can be handled really badly. And I'm not going to remember, but I will actually. Tapestry used to be a tool that we used for doing some little, you know, digital stories. You may or may not have used it. And they closed down. They didn't close down. They turned the tool into a commercial enterprise, and so it no longer was, used for what we were using it for. So they closed it down. For our purposes, they closed it down. But the way they handled the closing it down was absolutely wonderful. So, you know, they not only they kept what you already had. I mean, I remember they sent us all the different directions as to, you know, if we had stuff embedded, how we could still keep it, but we needed to change the URL, so they would send you. Well, I lost the whole lot, all the details. They'd already closed down, and I emailed them, and they sent everything back, and they said, you know, if I needed anything, any help. It was absolutely wonderful. It's like you kind of go, you cannot but wish them well and go, okay, life happens. But that is not normal, I would say. I would say that the way that some of these things disappear overnight, then you can get no communication. So there is all of those issues, aren't there, that are about how do you handle the constant change, both from a personal point of view in terms of your learning, but also how do you, you know, there is such a thing as a good and a bad way for doing some of these things.
Yeah, from the point of view of the service. And my most horrific one was Posterous, when Posterous disappeared. Because they provided beautiful tools for moving everything except the audio stuff. We had 1,000 posts on Posterous, all with audio in them. So that took quite a long time to sort out. But I think that also points to one of the things that is key to DS106, and it's the idea that you learn to do a lot of things for yourself rather than rely on services. It's suggested that you set up your own site, that you run your own blog, that you learn enough about that to, you know, move it if necessary, to care for it. I think one of the early things that Jim said was, you know, people should learn to be their own system admins. I'm not sure we're actually being system admins. I think that's maybe a step too far, but if you own own your own domain. Mm-hmm. You've there got more control than if you put it into, you know, WordPress.com or Blogger or Posterous or, you know, any of these other tools that come and go.
And that's also, I mean, it's also demonstrated in all sorts of ways, because it's like, you know, the idea of, you know, what you use for storing your photographs. I mean, I remember Ron, when they talked about Picasa was going to go, and he relied on it for whatever it was. Mm. I can't even remember. I've never used it properly, really. So it was neither here nor there for me, the fact that it was going. But he was desperate, because there was a particular feature that it had that he couldn't find anywhere else. And there is that, isn't there, where you, if you have an awareness about how these things are working, then you'd have backups, you'd have, you know, you'd go, okay, so if this disappears, I know that I could, you know, you hear Alan talking about this, you know, with his Flickr and the however many thousand photos he has, but he has, you know, another place where he could recover everything if it went belly up tomorrow. So all of these examples kind of help you, I think, develop a sort of meta literacy around all this, which is, you know, the learning to not rely, to not be attached, or that if you are using it and you love it, but still understand that, you know, it may be gone tomorrow, and not necessarily handled in the best way. That's, yes, you know, the other element, I think, which.
Yeah, and perhaps the important thing in digital storytelling is not the tool, but the story and what you're trying to express. So you can always do that a different way, I guess. And if it's worth it, it's probably worth doing it again. And if it wasn't, then you shouldn't cry too much. some things you don't mind going like that. I was, on the Posterous example, I wasn't quite happy. I was deeply upset to give up several days of life to study and figure out how to do it, but it was worth it to do it and to move it to a system that now I've got more control of and more understanding of. And
the idea, I mean, it's kind of, that is something that is, you know, that where the title for this week's episode, The Island of Lost Tools, comes from Alan Levine's 50 Ways to Tell a Story in his Wiki Spaces. Mm-hmm. And he has a page that where he puts the islands of lost tools, the ones that, you know, where something is gone. But the other element that is highlighted in that, of course, is what you've just said about the 50 ways to tell a story. So there are many different ways in which you could, you know, and in a sense, in that sense, it's not tool dependent. And what he illustrates with the 50 ways is that doesn't he use the one story, the domino story, to highlight all the features of all the different tools that he reviews on there?
Yeah.
I think that's the premise of it. So there is that, of course, and that if the only way that you can express something is through one particular storytelling tool, I guess that is something to think about, isn't it? Because, as you say, then maybe the story needs work.
Also, it can be quite good fun taking a story and telling it in different ways. And it's a way to learn again how to learn and how to figure out tools, how to evaluate things, because we are talking about digital, we're talking about software, how to evaluate software is to do the same thing with several different tools. What do you get out? What's the affordances of this tool? You know, why does that one work?
Which we kind of have as an ongoing conversation around, you know, there are those of us on DS106 that in the open participants who prefer to use apps for things, and then there are those of us who prefer to use something else. Mm. And we always have that sort of ongoing conversation around, you know, is, you know, what can you produce with this and how does it compare with that and so on, which is, you know, again, it's at one level you could say, well, it's just talking about preferences, but another level, it does teach you that there are so many different ways to achieve the same thing.
Yeah.
And in a sense, you know, it's looked at positively, it's a lovely thing that you can, you know, you could use an app. You can, like, you know, I'm remembering Sandy saying that she loves to sit with her iPad, creating things. And for her, that's kind of, she sits in her comfy chair and that's kind of, for her, that's the place to do it. I couldn't imagine anything worse. You know, making anything on that damn tablet that I have a love-hate relationship with, you know, it's like, really? No, don't make me.
I think something. I would be halfway in between. I think, given a choice, but we need to explore all the different pieces of software and how they use them in different ways to do things and not get hooked up. I think, and I think the probably message for this episode is that when you're learning something, learn how to learn rather than learn how to. Because impermanence is everywhere, as you would say.
even in your favorite tool. I tell you which one. You know how I love Photoshop, or at least I know more or less how to use Photoshop. I wouldn't say I love it, but they have this Save for Web feature that has caused an immense amount of controversy and everything because they've updated it. This is something like your fireworks that Adobe has bought and integrated into Photoshop, and now they don't want to support it anymore. And everyone is up in arms and really, you know, unhappy about it. And I am, because it's the one thing that has helped me learn about file size and about colors and about all sorts of things, which, you know, now you won't be able to. But it's the same, you know, it's the same thing about learning. You learn how to learn and you go, okay, so, you know, if that goes, but what you need is to understand the general principles, and then you can go and find out in the new version. I guess also you can find out that it's actually not going to be as good, but let's not go there.
Let's get this positive.
Because that happens, doesn't it? That often software gets, the good features that were maybe experimental, etc. They get dropped out because only a few people use them. So they just, it would be a nice thing to have, but not economical. So people drop features. Which again speaks to this thing of, you know, finding the 50 different ways in which you can do the same thing.
Yep. So I think that's probably enough. It's warning or not warning lost things.
We didn't cry this time. We had warrants. We might cry about our favorite things gone, but we didn't cry.
No, I think I'm over. I say that the lack of Google Reader has brought lots of other nice things instead. And how many times has things changed? I've only been playing with this stuff for, I don't know, 20 years, and that's not that long. Everything has changed, you know? Yeah, so we're counting everything breaking up, Alan. Yes, things fall apart. But that's a good thing. learn to love it. We learn to love it. We love it, don't we, Mariana? We love our impermanence. We love...
I love that. Castles on the Internet Sand. Yeah. I like that. That should have been our title, Alan. That's lovely.
Yeah.
There you go.
But right. We'll hang up there. I think we'll play a wee tune to say goodbye, unless you have any other... thoughts.
What have you got lined up? What have you got lined up?
Oh, absolutely nothing. I'm just scanning.
Something.
I have no idea. This is called Of the Web by yourself, Mariana. So let's just. Oh, it's 3 minutes long. You should look at.
Oh, I know what it is. That's
Hey there. So I'm walking down 20th Street in New York City. And if you've ever been to New York City, maybe the sounds of it give you an indication of what it's like. And places like New York, London, even the Grand Canyon. You can see pictures, watch movies of them, and get an appreciation of those spaces. But it really never matches the fidelity and the experience of actually being in that space. Not always possible. But that's the way I think about the web, too. Because the web is a unique space. As unique a place as the corner of 28th and Park Avenue in New York City. But the web being unique in a place that has been an open and incredibly scalable, perhaps, no, not perhaps, definitely the most pervasive, expansive, and potentially world-changing information compendium that has ever been. There's never been anything like it, obviously. And part of it is because of its very nature of being completely distributed and every piece of information on it equal in a sense of how you can connect to it. So the idea of being on the web is it's pretty easy to publish and distribute information and put things on the web. We get that a lot because we get things that look like books. When we think of video, honestly, things like Netflix, YouTube, it's not all that different from watching video the way we've done it before on TV screens, VCRs, press play. But when you think about video acting like the web, you get something different. And people are still trying to figure out what that means. So being of the web means thinking more about the way the web works in terms of linking information, of being dynamic, of being changeable, of being a thing that can be different every time you go back to it. And generally, it's just the mindset that I have found useful in everything that I've approached in terms of working on creating and inhabiting this space. Because otherwise, you're just looking at a picture of New York City when really it's much better to be in that space because that is what has worked. So be of the web, don't just be on the web.
Well, obviously that wasn't a bumper, but it was.
No, but it was very well planned, John.
I think that obviously my iTunes foo or Sixth Sense is working well there. That idea of going with the flow, I think, came through, which is a good way to deal with the web and tools and all sorts. And there's probably quite a lot of different connections. We must have played that on another show, but it was worth a re-listen. So thanks, Alan. I'm really glad you logged on to listen to yourself. And I'm looking now for something that is a bumper. Who knows? Here's a glitch, and then we'll pang up.
DS-106 good spell in 106 bullets. DS-106 radio for life. For life. For life. For
life. For life. Darn, I'm going to say this is a stereo now, Marianne.
For life.
Yes, for life. And I'm hanging up now. We've just said for life, so we are. And we will be next week. Cheers.